Once again, welcome to The Guild Podcast, the podcast for the Writers, Artists, and Readers Guild, a podcast that is trying to promote pop culture in all its various forms and throughout the world. My name is Chris Mary Holtman. I am your host. Today we're talking to a returning guest, so another first. Last podcast we had a first where we did a comic book review, me and my colleague Gustav Schielgen. Today we're having, as I said, Jonathan Vestmeyer, the author of Bodacious Creed, a zombie steampunk western, on to talk about his new Kickstarter for the sequel to Bodacious Creed. John is always a delight to have on. Unfortunately, the internet connection was not that great, so the episode has been edited heavily. But I would urge you to go in on Kickstarter and support his project. It's always nice to support indie authors, and we talk a little bit about that. We talk about the rewards and stuff. So, without further ado, let's talk to Jonathan Vestmeyer. My name is Chris Mary Holtman, and this is The Guild. Back to the podcast, Jonathan Vestmeyer.
Thank you.
So, when we spoke last, it was, you were just about to release Bodacious Creed.
Yeah, it's out. It's been out. Yep.
And now it's been out. Now you're, an author of some note, at least within the steampunk, western, zombie genre.
Yeah.
How's it been? I mean, it feels like you've been getting quite a bit of attention.
Yeah, it's doing well. The book's doing really well on Amazon. It's got there's an audio version now, so you can get it on Audible, and it's it's a pretty long book. The audio version is about 14 hours.
Yeah, how did that work? I mean, I know we're getting ahead of ourselves maybe a little bit, but I think it's interesting. I think we'll just kind of go back and forth about different things. But how is the process of getting something on Audible?
Well, you have to already have it either published or at least it had already been out for a few months when I did it. But I believe you can do it with a book if it's on, if you have it set up for pre-order, you can start the process of getting the audiobook done too. So, which I might do for the next book when I have it on pre-order, get the audio process started. But there's a site, acx.com, and I forget exactly what it stands for. So let me look it up. But that's, it should say it somewhere around here and I'm not seeing it. I think it stands for like Audible Creation. It's Audible's site for creators to collaborate. So writers can go on there. Your book has to already be on Amazon. Mm. And you select it and you basically say, yes, this is my property. And then you can set it up for people to, for readers to audition.
Okay.
To be the reader for the book, and you can offer to pay them ahead of time or split royalties.
Okay, so I mean,
I did a royalty split. Yeah.
Yeah. So is there do they have like demands? That it has to be this type of quality. It has to be,
Yeah, it does need to be, and they check it when it's done, and you submit it to them. They check it, and make sure the quality is good. So you want to get somebody who has good recording equipment and who does, good quality. They do quality check them, and fortunately, the person I did it, I chose, who happens to be a friend of mine. Although I did actually, because I wanted to make sure I got the right person, so I had her audition, and I got a few auditions from other people. And I felt that hers was the best. So I'm like, okay, well, that's good because I know her. It'll, be easier.
It'll be easier.
Anyway, and so that all works out. So she's got good, good studio and recording equipment. She really watches it for, if she hears a car go by or something that you can hear, she makes sure that it's not on the recording.
Yeah.
things like that. So, yeah. And generally it's not. It's like, okay, she heard it, but it didn't get into the reporting, but she gets concerned, so that's good.
All right.
So yeah, so that's basically it. And then they record it and they do, you know, she was doing one, sometimes two chapters at a time. Then I would listen to them and make sure that I didn't hear anything that sounded off. And if I had any kind of issue, I felt like a word was mispronounced or I wanted her to read, maybe alter a character's voice a little bit or something like that. We did a pickup sheet thing. So basically I could say, I want you to change this to this.
Mm-hmm.
So it was on a spreadsheet in Google Sheets. And so then she would, you know, go through and make the changes. Then I can listen to them again later and go, yep, that's good. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Yeah. So that's basically how that works. And then once it's done, you submit it to Audible, and it takes about 2 weeks for them to approve it, and they decide on the price.
Oh, okay, they decide.
Yeah, so on Audible, you don't set your own price. So Bodacious Creed, Steampunk Zombie Western on Audible is $25.
Mm. Or if you subscribe to Audible.
If you subscribe to Audible initially, free. Yes, you can get it for free.
Well,
so
it's
if you
not...
want to do that, go subscribe. You can get it as your first book for free. Or you can save up, you get credits, and you can save up credits, and you can use your credits on it.
Yeah.
And that will save you money, too.
Yeah.
Credits are worth, like, one full book credit. So you can get any book with, and it counts as $15. So we get slightly less royalties if people buy it with their credits rather than if they buy it full price. But still, it's still a sale, and it's still good. And so it's kind of been, that's been great, I think, partly because the book sounds interesting and everything, but partly because it's a $25 book, that actually helps, because that's the kind of book people want to spend their credits on.
Yeah,
a lot of sales for that.
Yeah, I have an Audible subscription, and I don't nearly listen to books at, you know, that rate. So I always have, like 4 or 5 credits, like, all the time.
Oh, wow. Well, so, if you haven't gotten it, you can listen to it.
Well, I did get it. I did actually get it. I haven't listened to it yet.
Oh,
I was busy listening to Harry Turtledove's Aftershocks, the final book in the World War series that he did.
Oh, very cool.
And I just haven't, I've read all the books before, and I had it laying on the shelf, and I just, like, you know what, I don't, because I only have it in hardcover, and it's such a big book. You know, Harry Turtledove's books are humongous. And it's just like, I don't want to sit on the bus or on the train with this huge book.
I get that. Yeah.
And I had already purchased this. So I didn't feel like I wanted to buy it on Kindle again.
Right.
So I just like, oh, well, I have credits to spend. So I'll just.
Yeah, that's good.
And it's a good audio version, actually, because sometimes you can get really, like, when they've converted old audio, they can be kind of, well, the narrator kind of sounds like it's a computerized voice. I mean, even if they're not a computerized voice, they still sound like it.
Because of how the conversion goes through. Interesting.
Yeah, it's like, I think Pierce Anthony's books, the Xanth books, are kind of like that, because they're on old tapes, and they've just kind of
weird. And so when the old tapes are converted and they've already lost some quality, it comes through like that.
That's really weird. And so there's no character in the voice. And, you know, I like that. Stephen Pacey's, when he reads The Blade itself, the Joe Abercrombie Grimdark books, I just love those. And I haven't been able to find anything that's kind of quite like it. But, I mean, he's a Broadway actor. So, I mean, I guess that has something to do with it. But let's move on.
I wanted to say a little bit more about the current book.
Sure, absolutely.
As you were talking about how it's doing, and yeah, it's selling really well. I'm really happy with that. But I'm putting a lot of effort into, you know, still continuing to get the word out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's working, and it has, last I checked, 72 reviews.
Mm-hmm.
So on Amazon, and all of them except for one are either so like 2/3 of them are 5-star, about 1/3 are 4-star, and just one review is 3-star.
No.
Well,
if you're worse,
even the 3-star review, if you read it, is a really positive review.
Yeah. So I mean, if your lowest grade, your lowest rating is a 3 stars.
Is a 3-star, and there's just one of them.
Yeah, you should be
pretty good.
So pretty happy with that. So yeah. I mean, and that's good. I mean, I think I was interviewing a guy named DePere, who writes for Angry Robot Books, and he said that the important part, because before he became published with Angry Robot Books, he did it all by himself, just like you're doing. And he said the important part is always to be around. As an author, an indie author, you have to be around, because if you don't keep up with it, it doesn't matter if your book sold 100 to 1,000 copies the first week. If you don't talk about it the second or third week, those numbers right. aren't going to stick around.
Yeah. Yeah, you've got to keep getting the word out there. And there's some services I use. Basically, on for Kindle, every quarter you can do a countdown sale. Mm-hmm. And what that is you can have it be like 99 cents. There's various ways you can do it, but basically the way I do it, I'll have it be like 99 cents for a week. Mm-hmm. And so during that time, then I will schedule with some of the services that have huge email lists,
yeah,
and send out lists of books that are currently on sale.
Yeah.
And so there will be like, depending on the list, like my book might be the only one that day, or it could be like 7 to 10 books. Mm. But still, I think the book looks attractive and stuff, and it's going out to huge lists, so I get some sales.
But you're
that what that does every 3 months, I'm able to kind of get a bump.
Yeah, because you're talking
do a bump and get word out again and get people interested.
Yeah, you're talking
all
about
over again. And I'm continuously getting sales and a lot of people reading it on Kindle Unlimited.
Yeah. Because I think you're talking about like BookBub, Early Bird Books.
BookBub's a big one. It'll probably be a while before I can get on to BookBub because they are super picky.
Yeah, okay. Because there's
others. I'm using one called Book Rebel and one called Free Booksy, and they've really given me good bumps.
Yeah.
And I make back about as much as I put into them. So.
Yeah. The Portalist is a good one. To check out, because they specialize in science fiction and fantasy. I get an email every week from the Portalist, or actually probably every day from the Portalist.
Check them out.
Because obviously they send to a niche audience.
Yeah. Well, the other one, what you do is they do send it. They have both of those lists have they send. God, my words today are kind of lacking. I'm much better at writing than I am at speaking. Both of those have fantasy and sci-fi portions of their list.
Yeah.
And so you basically they'll only send it out to the sci-fi fans. Yeah.
And I think because I think I have Book Rebel. I'm on Book Rebel's list.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I like
Book Rebel. I really like the format. I think it looks really nice the way they send it out. So I've used them twice, and I think I've used Bargain Booksy like 3 times. And so sometime in the next quarter, I'll do another one. And it'll take me a few months to get the money back, but that's okay. It really gets the word out there, and it's fun to go on to my Kindle Direct Publishing and just see that bump. Suddenly there's this many sales.
I saw that I just recently saw or noticed, I don't know if they've been doing it for longer, but Barnes & Noble, the Nook, they're starting with like self-publishing as well, that you can put out stuff through them.
Yeah, they've had it a while. Yeah. What I've used, at least at this point, some writers like doing like wide distribution, so mm-hmm. they're on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Smashwords, and they have all their books on all these sites. So far, I'm happy to just have it on Amazon, because everybody shops at Amazon anyway. Mm,
absolutely.
And most people read on Kindle, and I'd rather get the 70% amount per book than 35%.
Mm.
Because if you're not exclusive, it's 35. You'll only get 35%. But if you're exclusive, you get 70% of the sales for the Kindle books.
Okay.
So yeah. So at this point, I would rather do that. I mean, it could change in the future. I could see an advantage for me of doing it another way. But right now, I think that probably for me, just sticking on Kindle is best.
Yeah.
No,
I think the advantage of being on both Barnes & Noble and Kindle is, I think my wife She has a Nook. So, and I think there is an exclusive community that only uses the Nook.
You can. I have had Nooks, and you can read. Maybe it depends on the type of Nook. Maybe if it's like a Paperwhite one or something, it's only Nook books.
But yeah, she has
on
a
the ones that are more tablets.
Yeah,
you can get the Kindle app.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, and you can on iTunes too, because the Apple books are is actually not a great format. The Kindle is much better, which is odd. But so if we move on to the next phase here, the new Bodacious Creed book, as somebody who writes myself, I've always found that, because I started writing fantasy, and you're, you know, just like any fantasy buff reader, you think that, well, I need to write a whole series of books. I need to be Stephen Donaldson, or I need to be Tolkien, or I need to be David Eddings, or whatever. But I've always found that difficult. I've never been able to keep up an interest in my characters to take them to the next phase.
Right.
So what made you decide? Was it always obvious?
My fantasy books, it's been the same. It was the same with my fantasy novels, because I have a few fantasy novels out too. And with those, it just felt like they were more single books, you know. But this one, I just love the setting I came up with, and I love the characters, and I feel like there's so much there, and I just want to keep spending time with them and exploring their adventures. So yeah, so that's why this is becoming a series, is because I feel like I found, a place and characters that I just want to keep spending time with.
Yeah, but when you were working on Bodacious Creed, the first book, did it feel like you already had a story germinating, saying like, well, what if this happened, or I would like to explore this area, but that really should be its own book?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I feel like that world has so much for me to explore, and the first book is definitely a complete story. Things wrap, you know, almost everything wraps up, and then there are a few, and then I leave room open for the sequel. So the main, you know, the story, really the story wraps up, but there's a couple little things. It's not a cliffhanger or anything, so I mean the story's complete, but there's definitely room left there for the sequel, and that's where the next story is going to go. So
and
I don't want to give any more away than that.
I know so. What you have revealed is that it's set in San Francisco.
Yeah, the next book is going to be set primarily in San Francisco. There will be some still in Santa Cruz, because it's just kind of where the last one left off. Creed is still and he'll head up to San Francisco. So, and I've been doing a lot of research on San Francisco. It was crazy at that time in history.
It was
crazy. I mean, it kind of, San Francisco got. San Francisco was a really small place.
Yeah.
Until like 1849. So the gold was discovered in the area, sometime in 1848, and then in 1849 was the late 1848 and 1849 were the gold rush, and people were coming from all over the world into San Francisco, and this city got built up very quickly, practically overnight. It was really dangerous. There was hardly any law at all. And even later, when all that had died down, so we're in 1876 in Bodacious Creed, and it might go in 1877. I'm not exactly sure how long after the last book it'll be till he heads up. I'll get that figured out though. But even then, the police had a hard time enforcing the law. It was still very lawless in a lot of ways, and there were a few areas, specifically this area called the Barbary Coast, that they called the Barbary Coast after the Barbary Coast in Africa, where crime was just insane, and then Chinatown as well. There was still slavery in San Francisco.
Yeah,
not black slaves, but a lot of there were a lot of Chinese girls who were brought over and made to be slave prostitutes.
Yeah.
And Yeah, so there will be some of that explored in the book, and I believe, and yeah, I've got a lot of great ideas, and I'm getting a lot, and a lot of and kind of finding a lot of characters by reading the history.
Yeah,
because while Bodacious Creed, the first book, I made the Santa Cruz of their world a lot like modern day Santa Cruz, as if it was suddenly turned into a Wild West town.
Yeah, you know?
Because it's where I'm from, and I wanted to sort of honor the place that I'm. The modern Santa Cruz that I'm from, and kind of give it a reflection in this other world. For, and then there were some historical figures in there too. But for the next one, I mean, San Francisco was so crazy as it was that I want to be more accurate to history.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's still an alternate history and everything.
Yeah.
But I want to have some of the actual people who were there, you know, as characters in the book, and some of the criminals and. Yeah, it should be pretty interesting.
So did you start with one specific idea, or how did the process actually work? Did you think like, well, I want to explore this world, I want to explore more of these characters, where can I put them next? Or did you have like an idea from before and you said like, well, what if Bodacious Creed was part of this world? Or, I mean, where did it all like come from?
The world came from me. I came up with it for a class in grad school. I got my master's of fine arts in animation and visual effects. And the final project for when you do a thesis in that line, whether you're actually, you know, focused on visual effects or like me, 3D modeling or animation, you do a demo reel to show.
Yeah.
You know, what you can do. Feel of the models for my characters, but I had a class called pre-production, and in the way that class worked, it was sort of a reflection of how they come up with ideas for movies and stuff in Hollywood. So so basically it was about you kind of go in not really knowing what you're going to do, and then you kind of get ideas and decide, okay, this is, and so you want to do a theme for your demo reel, so it's not just a bunch of random models.
Yeah.
Or a bunch of random things. So I wanted to do Wild West steampunk, and then the kind of zombie aspect came into it later. My teacher kind of pushed me to do kind of a twist on it, and so that's what I came up with. And I came up with the characters, with a few main characters. I came up with Creed, with Anna, and with the coyote, Coco Nino. So... Mm-hmm. And then I did the models of them and stuff. But you know, when I came up with it, I, at that time, I thought this would make, you know, this could make a really cool novel.
Hmm.
I didn't set it in Santa Cruz until after I actually started the novel. I decided that would be a really neat thing to do. And that's when I kind of decided the exact year and things like that, and started to really work out the details. But I have the basic story of Kree getting killed and brought back to life, you know, and trying to bring in the guy who had killed him, and then you know, I already kind of had San Francisco linked in with it because Kree had been there before, as had Cantrell, the bounty hunter, and it made sense for it to be tied in with Santa Cruz, and so that just so just kind of a natural place for the story to go. I don't plan ahead too far usually. No. What I do is I make sure I understand the characters and the setting really well.
Mm.
And then I sort of see where it goes.
Okay. I think we're a lot alike in that, because I'll usually get like an idea first of like, this is, you know, it could be, you know, you get a vision of something. You all of a sudden you kind of get like something out of the corner of your eye. It's like, that's something that I want to explore, but you don't have any oftentimes I'll work with like, you know, wouldn't it be interesting if there was a story set here? With this, like, I spoke to you, I think we talked a little bit last year when I was in that mock Western town. And I was kind of like, you know, the Western setting is really cool, but so much Western has been done. What if you kind of put the Western setting in a place that isn't the Wild West? What if you just do the same thing same feel, and that's when I kind of came up with the idea of placing a story in Finland or Karelia, which is like on the border between Finland and Russia, in the beginning of the 19th century, and putting in a good portion of spiritualism and stuff like that into it as well, like what or spiritism, yeah. what would happen then, and so. So right now, that's just the basics, and I kind of work with it more.
Like Stephen King's Dark Tower is, you know, mid-world much that is like the Wild West.
Yeah.
You know, and or Westworld, where it's actually not the Wild West. It's it's a park of the Wild West in the future with robots. And so, yeah. You know, I mean, I just love, I love all kinds of Western sci-fi.
Mm.
You know, or Serenity, Firefly.
Yeah, I was not too fond of Serenity, but that's we don't have to discuss that here.
But Firefly, it takes place in another solar system, and you know, but it's people from Earth who move to another solar system, but it's got the Wild West frontier feel to it. And they even dress like they did, you know. And so you recognize those things and what they mean, but it's in a different. It's in a different context, but it's a similar context, so it feels right.
And I think we might have touched on that last time we spoke, and we talked about Stephen Donaldson and his Thomas Covenant Chronicles. You know, how to place something that is familiar in something in a setting that is unfamiliar.
Yeah, it's been so long since I read those. I think I was a teenager.
Yeah, and so, and I read them as a teenager too, and they don't really stand the test of time. If it's the first time you read fantasy of that kind, then it works. But if you read it in the beginning and then you read a bunch of other fantasy or science fiction or whatever, then they don't measure up.
Oh, that's really interesting.
I think that the gap I think they're called just the gap. His kind of like reinterpretation of the Nibelung saga, set in space, stands the test of time much better.
Oh, yeah, I haven't read them in a long time. I think I only actually ever got through the first two of them.
Mm.
Anyway, but I know they're like two series, the two trilogies. So.
Yeah. But you've decided to do another Kickstarter. Your first Kickstarter was successful. What makes you go that route? I mean, I know you probably chose Kickstarter because you're familiar with the format, but there are other things, Indiegogo and things like that, where it's not like a win or lose. It's get the money over time.
And if this one doesn't go through, I almost don't want to say this here, because I don't want people to not back it. But if it doesn't go through, I'll probably put it on Indiegogo, because any money I get is going to help.
Yeah. So is the biggest expense?
But I would like to kind of ensure that I get that full amount. And there's something about Kickstarter is, you know, I think that format of the Kickstarter, I think the all or nothing kind of builds a sense of urgency and of people really wanting to come together and make something project they're interested in work.
Yeah. But I was going to say, what is it that when it comes to that, I don't know if you want to reveal too much, but what is it that a Kickstarter funds?
Okay. So, well, I mean, it depends on the Kickstarter, but for mine, I don't have a problem explaining it at all. In fact, I reveal all of that right on the Kickstarter. So if you go to I'm sure you'll link to it.
Yeah, absolutely. There'll be links in the show notes.
So let me just preface it and kind of explain it real quick so people know what we're talking about. So, the second book in the series, the first book was Bodacious Creed, a steampunk zombie western. The series is called The Adventures of Bodacious Creed. Real simple title, but it gets right to the point. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, so I decided to go with that. The second book is going to be called, and probably the future books will follow this format and be kind of Harry Potter sounding and the, Harry Potter and the whatever. So this is Bodacious Creed and the Frisco Syndicate is book two. And, okay, so basically, I do have at the bottom of the description, I have in a description of everything, basically this is what it is. And I think the video is really good. I worked really hard on the video. It's 2 minutes long.
Very nice video. I was very impressed.
Good. Thanks. Yeah. So, and one great thing about that is that actually that lets me use my, skills that I learned in grad school that I have a master's for. So, that helps.
Yeah.
Okay. So the, Kickstarter, what it's going to pay for, backer rewards, obviously, because those need to be paid for. And I have a spreadsheet that helps me figure out, about how much I can expect backer rewards to be, and therefore also figure out how much total the Kickstarter needs to make for me to pay for everything. So backer rewards, the editing, I'm going to get professional editing off right, before I actually put it out this time. So, which will avoid a few problems with the last one. There were some mistakes that I had to keep correcting even after it had gone out. And now it's very clean, but it took a little bit of time. I thought I had everything initially, but it helps tremendously to have a professional editor. So
you recommend that?
I do recommend that. And it costs money though. And so that's, I need help paying for that. My son and I are doing all right financially, but something like that is tough for me to pay for that much extra. So that'll help. So help with that for the cover art. And I already have an agreement with the cover artist on how much that's going to be. He's the same guy who did the cover art for the first book. And for an initial fee for the my narrator. So she'll get an initial amount to record it, and then she'll also share royalties on the audiobook version. So as long as as everything goes through on the Kickstarter, I'll be able to pay for all that.
Okay.
I already plan to put that money aside, and to have my parents hold on to it for me.
Okay.
so that way there's no possibility that I can, that I can spend it until it's time to fulfill the rewards and get all that stuff taken care of. So yeah, I've got it. And then any extra. And then I also set aside some for any additional research I might need to do.
Okay. So what kind of rewards?
So the rewards I think are pretty cool. So it has very similar rewards to the first one, and some different stuff too. At the $1 level, even you get something. It's the you get a large, high quality image of the wraparound book cover, because I believe that everybody who backs a crowdfunding project should get something. It cost me nothing to do that, but it's a lot better than getting a thank you. You get something cool. So rewards also include, of course, digital version of the book, either Kindle or EPUB, or if you really want it, a PDF. The trade paperback. There will be a limited edition hardcover, and the limited edition hardcovers for the first book look fantastic. I'm really happy with them, and I number them too. So once the Kickstarter's done, I'll count up the number of hardcovers it's going to be for the backers, and then I'll add some to that for giveaways. So the only way you can guarantee you're going to get it is by backing.
Okay.
At the right level. They all do giveaways where people can enter, but a lot of people enter those, and so you have a chance to get one, but it's small. Also, let's see, what else? This time, since finally you can do print-on-demand, not just books and CDs and stuff, but print-on-demand decks of cards.
Okay.
And I love decks of cards. I love card decks. I love card magic and stuff. So I'm going to do a card deck with based on the book, so it'll have it'll be an actual like poker playing card deck, but based on characters and things in the book for the king, queen, and things like that. Is that it? I was gonna have a poster, but I took that out. Nobody had backed to that level, and the size of the poster would be such that it'd be hard to send overseas, and I wanted to make sure that Yeah, so that I took that out, but if somebody really wanted that, I might be able to do that. And then there are kind of more personal like awards, backer rewards. You can get at just $10, you'll get the you know the picture and the digital book, and you'll get your name in the book as in the acknowledgement section. Mm-hmm. There's a level where you can name a character in the book. Mm-hmm. And I just added a new level, and there's only – I limited it to 3 people because I don't want the book to get kind of overwhelmed, even though it would be nice to get all those donations. But where you can actually be a character in the book. So you can have a character as a minor character based on you, but I plan for it to actually – those characters to actually have some – influence over the plot.
Okay.
So that if they weren't there, the plot would go a slightly different direction. So they'll be important, even if minor.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool.
I added that yesterday, and one of the people who already backed it upped his level. So that's cool. So at least one of those is taken now.
Yeah.
And there's 2 and 3 total.
Yeah. So we're kind of finishing up here. And I was just wondering, how far are you into the backing? Well, how much is left?
Let me check it. Last I looked, it was at $985, and that's 28%. So, yeah, I'll check. Why not?
But while you're checking, why don't you?
It's probably the same. Yeah, it's the same. So it's at $985 already, which is 28%.
Mm-hmm.
So only $15 away from 1,000.
Yeah,
and I need 3,500, and it's got 25 days to go. So
25 days to go.
Yeah.
So we'll get the word out and get people backing. Definitely. It'd be excellent.
I mean, these books have got gunfights and automatons, you know, aka robots. Although they call them in my Wild West, they call them steelies.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got. You know, steam technology and lots of adventure and intrigue and yes, they have a certain type of zombies.
So anyway, where can the people get a hold of you, come in contact with you? What is your social media, everything like that?
So my website is the hub for everything for me. So it's jonathanfestmeyer.com. I'm on, and there'll be links to my Facebook and Twitter and everything there.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a YouTube channel. I don't post there very much. I was kind of trying to do the YouTube thing, but, it just makes more sense for me to kind of do just writing primarily, you know, it's more of, that's just more, way more my speed because when I do make a video, like the video for the Kickstarter, I put a lot into it, and you know, I don't have time to do just all videos like that when I'm really a writer. So, but there's a link to that too, and and you can check out my blog there, the Wild Steampunk blog, and there's a lot of cool stuff on my website as well. So yeah,
and you have
that's my hub.
And you have a Twitter.
Yes, it's and the link to that is also on my website, but it's Festmeyer.
Mm-hmm. And we'll.
I think I don't even know how I ended up with that, but I did. So it was just my name twice, like Duran Duran or something.
Yeah, it'd be an awesome steampunk band.
Festmeyer would be an awesome steampunk band. Yeah, I agree. That'd be great. Maybe someday they'll do that.
But before we go too, what do you think? What do you think the future holds for Bodacious Creed in that world? What do you want to see in the future? I mean, do you have any grand plans apart from making
I have some ideas of where everything's kind of at least going in the next couple books. But honestly, I don't know how long the series is going to be. I'm letting my muse take me, and I'm letting the characters lead me.
Mm-hmm.
But if I feel like it's getting stale, then I'll wrap it. Then I'll find a way to wrap it up well. You know, if I kind of sense that it's time to wrap it up, I also kind of feel like this world, you know, it has so much story potential that even if at some point I finish Creed's story, I can still write in the same world.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like how J.K. Rowling has come back to, you know, her Harry Potter world and is now doing the Grindelwald stuff. She did some other books after that were good but didn't do as well, and it was so cool. And I'm like, God, she's got this awesome fantasy world that is, you know, that is really quite unique, and it'd be great if she did more in there, and then she did. So
It was kind of like we mentioned Pierce Anthony before. But there's even Terry Pratchett and stuff like that to mind when you talk about that. You're an indie author. Do you have dreams of being published through a big publishing house or a bigger publishing house or a publishing house at all?
A bigger publishing house would have to make me a really good offer. The thing is, from what I learned about traditional publishing versus indie publishing is there's not necessarily a whole lot of advantage unless you're really big to go with an indie. To go with a traditional publisher, because you have to market yourself as anyway.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they expect you to do your own marketing anyway. So if I'm going to do that, I may as well get much more, you know, much better royalties. One thing that I think is going to help the image of indie authors a lot is that Amazon is now cracking down on low quality books.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, so I saw that. I was like, oh, good, because, you know, and as people start to get what that means, they'll understand that means that when they buy an independently published book, it should be well edited, and, you know, it should at least be really well edited. You know, and clean. I think that's what the Amazon's really looking for, which is gonna, I think that's gonna be just great for our image in general, because people still have, there's kind of still kind of a stigma, you know, against some indie authors. I think people are sort of sometimes are more reluctant to try an indie author.
Yeah.
And then they may try somebody and go, okay, this person's really good. But yeah, I like having all that creative control over my books. So it's not out of the question if a publisher came to me and said, "Wow, we love Bodacious Creed, you know, we would like to, you know, publish the series, and we're going to offer you this big amount," then I you know, and you'll get, you know, we'll get you out there all over the place. Then yeah, I might go for that. But, yeah. But I'm not really seeking.
No. So no agent, stuff
no,
like that.
I've had agents before. I actually had one that, it's not a long story, but their first reader told them when they read my novel, Tam She's Imp, that it was the most original fantasy novel they'd read in years. So, yeah. So that was pretty cool. That's a little longer story than that. But that was one part of it that was pretty cool. But they had a hard time selling it because it was a shorter novel.
Yeah, you know? Okay.
So, yeah.
Well.
So whereas a lot of people these days with indie authors, you know, like writing shorter novels. I like having a story be as long as it's going to be, and that's just how long that story wanted to be. So.
Yeah, I think that's what you. I think we talked about that once over Facebook Messenger, just.
Yeah,
random probably. Like that. I was talking about my woes and not really seeing an end to the story I was working on then, and you just said you gotta let it be as long as it needs to be or it wants to be. I think that's the best.
Did you get it done?
It is done. It is done. It ended up being 110,000 words unedited, of course. But so I'm in the very very arduous place of editing.
Yeah, I know that place for sure. Yeah,
and so I'm using Pro Writing Aid to try to edit it first and foremost myself.
Okay.
And we'll see where it goes from there. I'm working kind of like on some projects simultaneously. I sent some short stories out to some collections. So we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah. The first draft of Bodacious Creed was longer than anything I'd written. It was 140,000 words. Mm. And the published version now is 120,000.
Yeah. So I'm a little shy of your.
but it just kept going, and I'm like, well, this is, you know, and I did know there was an end in sight. I just knew that there was a lot to the story. Yeah.
And that's the thing. I mentioned Brett Savery before, and he was talking about like, as a publisher, we like stories that are around 100,000 because once it comes over 100,000, it's more costly to print.
Okay.
So I was trying to put a limit there, even though that particular story would not fit with his publishing house, because he has a very different type. But
okay.
So I'm gonna try to self-publish this. Actually, my wife was saying like, why not try to get it out there and send it in somewhere? It's just like, no, I don't think that this is a story that anybody's gonna pick up in that way.
Well, the other thing is you have to wait so long for publishers to get back to you.
Yeah.
And then very often, unless you've got an agent, it's going to go into their slush pile.
Yeah. That's what everybody says. Everybody says, we only take agent
and script. It's like, I am sick of the slush pile. It's possible to do it on my own now. I'm going to do it on my own.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to do the best job I can to make sure that it's as well edited as any traditionally published book out there. And,
Well, John, it was a pleasure, just like
it was
always, and it's I'll probably continue to try to pick your brain whenever I need some help.
Happy to share, and I'll pick your brain if I need to as well. If you got anything, let me know. Yeah.
I think it's probably the best thing, and sometimes what I miss the most is having just kind of roundtable discussions with other authors about things, and it's not easy to get. Especially indie authors, we're everywhere. We're everywhere and we're nowhere. It's like there's never another indie author when you need them.
Yeah, I'm in a couple of. I should see about asking if they'll let you in. I'm in a group that's primarily Southern California authors, primarily indie authors. I can I'll ask if. They'll take people from elsewhere too. It's a good group. So that's one of the groups I'm in.
Yeah. Okay.
And I've actually met with them locally from one meeting, but it was really tough because my son was making noise when people were trying to read and stuff. So I was only really able to go to one meeting, but I do connect with them online and we share information there. So.
Okay. Yeah. I appreciate it. Cool. Well, as I say,
I'll talk to them. They'll probably say yes.
Yeah. Well, John, looking forward to the Kickstarter. Everything will be in the show notes, all the links.
Awesome.
And we'll chat again soon.
Okay, it was great talking to you again.